Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Welcome to City Alpha 3, the Nerd Party Star Trek podcast. I'm Philip Gilfus, your host, joined as always by my two fellow Strandies, Darren and Daniel. Gentlemen, how are you doing on this fine Star Trek day?
I'm ready to punch it up, Philip, because you said this was the Star Trek podcast, right? That's punch it, right? Is that what we're doing
Darren,
this week?
Yes, we're going to be rewriting Discovery.
Oh, okay.
Daunting task.
There's going to be a blue angel, totally different from your Earth red angel.
Is this your Star Wars thing again, Darren? There's other colors besides red and blue. I don't know what it
They're
is.
They're the best colors.
What about you, Daniel? Done any tricky things?
You know, now I've been playing through Star Trek Online.
Okay, still. Did you win?
No, not
have
yet.
You,
no,
okay. Have you become the president of the United Federation of Planets? Because that's the goal, right?
I did spend about an hour and a half the other night jumping around on Nimbus 3.
That's both fun and not fun. I mean, yeah. There's so many missions, but after a while you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Planet forbidden.
I didn't see any unicorns, but I don't know.
Did you dance naked? Because that's really the best way you got to experience it.
I don't think I'm the right age for that.
Okay. Well, what about you, Darren? Any tricky things, or are you going to talk about Star Wars and bore me?
What? Sheesh. Says the man who does the Timey-Wimey podcast.
Do you do a Star Wars podcast, Darren? If you have a podcast, you can talk about it. That's the rule.
Okay. Yes, Star Wars is... We're still waiting for Star Wars to come back. It's been a while.
Oh, we're going to get a trailer soon, right?
Sure. Maybe. I mean, Celebration, the big Star Wars convention that I can't go to and I'm sad about, is in about 24 days. So,
are you banned or something, or what happened?
No, it's just it's in Chicago, and that's far and expensive. So,
okay.
We were all expecting it to be back in L.A. area, so we were all very surprised that it went to Chicago. But we'll just wait for it to come back into the zip code.
Yes. Hashtag so LA. All right. Well, because we're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery's latest episode, Project Daedalus, we have to bring in someone who's actually been here the entire time, but will now be a major focus of this podcast, and that's Robin.
That's
Welcome.
Not boding well for the end of this recording, Philip. just the ground you're laying.
Oh, it's pressure. Hi, I'm Robin.
Yay. So, Robin, tell us a little bit about your podcast background. Where are you coming from in the podcast world?
So, I am a co-founder of Black Girls Create with my cousin, Bayana, and our friend, Constance. We have a podcast about Harry Potter called Wizard Team, in which we discuss all magical things. And then we have a Doctor Who podcast called Who Watch Time and Relative Blackness in Space, in which we discuss all sorts of timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly things.
But they don't have a Star Trek podcast, so therefore no competitor yet.
We do not have a Star Trek. I'm the only one that watches Star Trek. I mean, we have people in our community that watch Star Trek, and they're actually the reason why I started watching Star Trek, because I was very much opposed to it because of some childhood trauma. But yeah, I'm the only one in the...
We're all thinking episodes about what it could possibly be. There's so many options.
It was just my aunt was a Trekkie and was very,
scary Trekkie.
I mean, I think because I'm realizing now that she's a nerd, but she wasn't nerdy about anything else. She was just, very into Star Trek and very into Deep Space Nine. And so I was just like, that's a cult.
So she had, eight cardboard cutouts of Sisko in her room or
something.
Well,
you have to have,
you know,
the full hair, and then you have the beard hair, and then you have the bald beard, and, you know.
It was really Worf, Yeah, she was.
I mean, who could fault her for that?
She was a Worf person. She still is.
Was she giving Jazia the side eye? Hands off my man.
It was just very much like you can't watch the episode. You have to like have all of this background and all of this stuff. And I'm like, girl, it's not Harry Potter. I don't understand why you're so in. You know,
I mean, it's not like there's some other huge 50-year.
I didn't know.
Franchise.
I was a child. I didn't know.
Now she's all like, I'm in Doctor Who. Come on. That's what you need.
It's like, are you drawing all this out of the 5-minute teaser at the beginning of the episode? Like, where are you getting this content?
I was like, I think my aunt writes fan fiction. You know, she has all these.
See, Worf knew O'Brien from their time with the Enterprise and all these shenanigans they got into.
Who's Data? I don't understand. So yeah, I recently got into it, and then I just like, I did this really intense Star Trek binge that I kind of like live tweeted on my way through it on Twitter, and then some people were like, "Oh, now do this one." So I've watched them. I watched all of them except for the original series, but I did watch the episodes of the original series that I started. Because I have started it. I watched The Cage, so it was like perfect. So
there you go.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in, I don't know, 50 words or less, what is your Star Trek Discovery thoughts, opinion, just as a whole?
I love it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We need
that. I feel like I'm going to be alone here.
You know, and that's good. You know, we can be, well, first season we had mixed opinions.
Also,
second season.
I'm upset with whoever hates Ash Tyler. I forget which one of you hates Ash.
This season I do.
Okay.
I liked him first season. Now
nine
he's
times
always...
out of ten, if someone hates something in Discovery, it's just
it's true. It's true.
Well, and this is also interesting because this is the first season where there have been a lot of
it's
podcasts.
The second season, Darren. This
you
is the
know what
season.
I mean. This show, like, I mean, yes, there have been podcasts for a long time, but I mean, there's such a huge gap between Enterprise and now that now this, I mean, it's a whole different experience of talking about it live as it's unfolding versus commenting on something that we know how it begins, middle, and ends.
I would love to do like a retro podcast where we're like watching Voyager episode for the first time and be like, what are they doing? This isn't...
Voyager is my favorite. I'm currently in a rewatch of Voyager and I looked up and I'm already in season 5 and I'm like, oh no.
I know, Kes is gone. It's sad.
I was so happy when Kes is gone, but that's neither here nor there.
All right. All right. Well, so we're here, of course, to talk about episode 9, Project Daedalus. Lots going on here, so let's just start with the obvious that we kind of already mentioned. And Daniel, that's your favorite character, Robot Lady, a.k.a. she has a name, Arium. What'd you think about her rise and fall?
It would have been nice if it wasn't all in the same damn episode. Like, she goes from having 2 lines 2 episodes ago to, like, now we have to be sad that she's dead. And it's too... I get so frustrated, I really do. It's the Discovery writers trying to take shortcuts and trying to make us feel things when you could have done this all organically. It's really easy. I can retroactively make this episode impactful. All those scenes that she has that she is to
in her montage.
All those scenes that she has where she has to decide where she wants to keep it or save it or whatever. You have those scenes from previous episodes. So you give her 2 seconds of screen time 4 episodes ago or 8 episodes ago or whatever.
Yeah.
Where she's talking to
like Tilly
or whoever. Yeah. Detmer, whatever. It's so frustrating to get to finally, because we talked about, I remember in season 1 we were talking about Robolady, and I'm like, I really hope we get to see her backstory. And
what episode before she dies?
What episode before she dies, the episode that she dies in. And it's like, oh my god, like, okay, this is just, it's just frustrating to me. I guess at least we got it, but I just wish they played it out a little bit more, because it feels... That end scene is emotional, but it would be so much more impactful if we cared at all about Robolady, and we don't.
Now, Darren, will you be constructing a life-size Arium Robolady mech droid for your next convention?
No. I think Although, I mean, okay, so we obviously watch this on CBS All Access, and I've paid the little bit extra to not watch commercials. So I was very surprised when I totally thought I was watching a commercial at the very, very beginning of this episode for some other sci-fi thing for about 10 seconds.
Welcome to Black Mirror, episode 5.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, wait, no, this is actually her memories. And no, I totally agree with you, Daniel. We wanted to know more, and we wanted it more spread out. You even could have taken all the shots that they showed in the beginning of this episode and placed them over the last two episodes or something like that. I mean, I felt way more interested in the Brazen security officer. Like, when she was in peril, I was way more like, oh my gosh, like, no, don't kill this character. I want her around.
She's versus the only Ariam, one wearing a skirt. Come on now.
Yeah, versus Ariam was like, okay, like, yeah, it was kind of like show, not tell. Again, I was told all these other characters care about Ariam, so you should too. Not, I care about this character because of what you've shown me over the last seasons. I mean, because Robolee's been there since the beginning.
She's had a sense of humor the whole time. We just didn't know about it.
Well, you don't get her jokes. It's kind of, you know.
And granted, I mean, they have used her more in this season. I mean, with all the sphere stuff and the decoding, like, she's gotten way more lines and a lot of... And she's kind of replaced Stamets, if you think about it, as kind of like the connection with Tilly, because Tilly's not really hanging out down in Sadsville anymore.
Engineering.
Yeah, engineering. But it just wasn't enough.
Sorry, Sadsville did take me there. Like, he's just playing opera the whole time in engineering.
Although, maybe she could have bonded with Tig, who know where she is. I haven't seen her in, like, weeks.
She's in this episode.
Jet.
Where is she?
You blink and you miss her.
she's on the computer screen when they're like, oh, this one lady is red and the rest of them are blue. I can't remember what the context of the scene was, but there's a scene where they're showing all of the crew, and she's there. She's listed.
I get what you're saying. A manifest or something.
Yeah.
Well, so sorry, that just doesn't count enough for me. That's not an actual.
Well, she's on the crew officially. She's
at
not
least
just
they're
wandering.
Recognizing that she's still around. I guess.
So, Robin, what'd you think of Discovery Girl Squad? Apparently, that we did not know was around.
I mean, I agree. I loved it, but it was also, like, we had a lot of episodes. I mean, we had that whole... That was this season, right? I can't even remember. With Tilly and May. And that would have been a really good time to show, like, if Ariam adored Tilly, she would have been very upset when Tilly, like, disappeared into the mycelial network. So I do agree that, like, they could have seeded some of that stuff earlier, and it did feel very much like... In the beginning, we're going to introduce all this stuff for this character. And I was kind of shocked when she actually did die, because I was like, but we just met her and I just kind of really want to know her now. Like, it didn't have the emotional beats because they didn't earn it. But I do hope, because they were, I think I read or someone told me they were going to be focusing more on the bigger crew this season. So I'm hoping that we do get to see more of Girl Squad, like what's left of the Girl Squad, because right.
Team Girl Squad.
I love them all.
Yeah.
Big fan.
I'll get over this, but there's a little bit of like, aren't like there's serious ranking problems, like the lieutenant commander's hanging around at the end, but whatever, that's fine. I never understood the
rankings in Star Trek, like even to this day, like Harry Kim is an ensign the whole time. But he's on senior staff.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
You know what you were saying about, you know, her emotional connection to May, or like if she had been connected to Tilly in that scene, that made me think of in like Next Gen. You have think of like Data. Like, okay, we have Data.
Who's Data?
And we know he has a great friendship with Geordi. But Geordi also has a lot of great episodes with Barclay, but in a different way. And if they had done more of that with Tilly, whereas Tilly obviously has this relationship with Stamets, like kind of mentorish, kind of you know, they're the four geeks. But to then see also, you know, she just spends all her time. I mean, she has Burnham, but, you know, I agree with you, though. They could have been showing that more in that May episode. That was a great opportunity.
Yeah, and I think that, like, you get Captain Pike more being upset about Tilly, and, like, he just got here. He doesn't really, all he knows about her is that she's kind of quirky and yelled at him when she, you know, like, seeing ghosts.
You have beautiful fingernails.
Yeah.
Captain.
Yes, they have that, I don't want to say flirty, because that would be unprofessional. I don't know what they have.
I think they have a relationship or something. He thinks that she's weird in a endearing way, which I, as a weird person, as an endearing weird person, I understand that a lot. I get that.
Uncle niece.
Yeah.
There,
yeah, more of an uncle niece situation.
And she just changed a command program. He wants her to succeed, obviously. And he gives her leeway, like, when, I mean, all the May stuff, you know, she's definitely acting inappropriately, but we all understand why.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, with the Arium, I mean, you know, and these are, I agree with everything that's said, but I mean, you know, as someone who tends to have negative things about Discovery, on the whole, I thought the Arium story was fine. You know, the only thing that I was left wanting, other than what we just said, was I still don't understand what an augmented human is. Like, so in the shuttle crash that was alluded to that killed her fiancé, was she, like, horribly disfigured?
Philip, they were married.
Oh, sorry, you're right, husband.
But look at, like,
was
Detmer.
She Darth Vader'd up after that, and that's how she became augmented?
Like, Detmer is an augmented human with the eye stuff. Like, that's
like a metal plate in your
sense.
Head. I mean, that's not...
No, I know, but I mean, that makes more sense than full-body prosthesis, you know.
Presumably, Detmer has a fake eye, a prosthetic eye.
Right.
Because they do have that great line, that great little exchange, that tiny little exchange where Tilly was saying something about Arium being augmented, and Detmer was walking by, and she's like
what?
Augmented girls for the win, or whatever, you know, whatever she said.
And then she's like, you're half augmented. I'm like, oh, that's augmentist, and you can't.
did you just muggle me?
You're mudblood. Oh, heck no.
Oh, no.
No, we got that last episode, and we talked enough about it.
Mudblood's a whole nother thing.
That's right. But I guess I was curious about, I don't know, again, not to be like the, oh, it's the 23rd century, and it, but, you know, but I would just be curious, you know, augmented humans, would be interested to know how that works. Because, the technology is limited. I always like introducing limits. So, you know, she only has a memory
and
capacity of X.
And I always assumed that she was augmented, like, another species augmented her. Even if she's still human, be, like, another race within the Federation did the procedure.
The Binars?
Or something like that.
So I thought of, I don't know, Phil, I know that you watch Doctor Who. Bala Cephalata from The Voyage of the Damned. That's kind of how I thought of it. Like, cyborgy.
Oh, that's right.
Like,
yeah.
You just...
I got it, yep.
She got into a crash and they replaced the parts that couldn't, and then I figured... Just gave her a whole...
She's the 6 million credit woman.
Yeah, and they just gave her a whole face plate because the skin underneath is badly damaged or something. So that's kind of how I rationalized it to myself, but you do have to take leaps.
Yeah, she's... And, I mean, I don't know. I know you shouldn't talk about people's appearance. But, like, they cast, like, the most, like, model-y, like, thin, blondish, white, and, like... contrast to, like, Arium. I'm like, that's anyway, that's quite a contrast anyway. But yeah, and anything else about, you know, whether it's the red eye effects, like, did you guys follow, what did you think was happening when she was downloading or uploading, and like, where did you think the influence was taking her, or what do we even think where the influence was taking her? Because I actually think it was a little vague about, is it, and we'll talk Section 31 here in a second, but was it the control, or was it a third party, or was it, you know,
I think
Reddingle's
it's also
cousin?
Confusing because there's the time travel aspect that's also thrown in, that the probe that initiated all this came from the future, and but they kind of glossed over that in all their discussion of it this episode.
Oh, the sphere. Well, I guess I don't know.
I mean, they're talking about, obviously, their goal is for It's like they were pulling strings to get her to that base with the sphere data. That was the plan for Control to gain sentience or something.
Yeah, well, to end all sentient life.
Life.
No, but I mean, they made it sound like the Control AI, which is the one that all the admirals feed data into to make decisions on a galactic scale, which is situated in Section 31 headquarters, not a good idea, that it was trying to get Arium to bring the sphere data so that it could take the leap to consciousness that it wanted. That's what I thought they were saying.
What does Control need with an augmented human?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the way I understood what was happening was, well, at first I thought it was that someone in Control, like, I knew when they blamed Ash and she was doing the red eye thing, it, like, pretty quickly, like, oh, it's not Ash, Tyler, it's her.
It might be Robin. We don't know. The jury's still out. It's probably Ash.
It's definitely not Ash. Because we also got the, like, next week and they make out and I'm here for it. But I thought that, like, Control had hacked into her. Or not Control, sorry. Section 31. What's his name? The one that Georgia's trying to replace.
Captain
Leland.
Leland, yeah.
Leonard Lockheed Leland. We got there eventually.
Sounds a lot like
the triple Lurk.
Yeah, a lot like Lurk. But I thought that maybe he had somehow, you know, like, that Section 31 was definitely controlling her. But then it turns out that it's Control, and Control's killed people. But how does Control kill people? He turned off the life support?
Turned off life support.
And gravity, yeah.
Yeah.
But then what was
And then the bodies hit the floor, Daniel, am I right?
Ooh.
Wait, then who at this point faked the recordings? And oh my God, can we talk about the fake recordings? Oh my God. Oh my God.
But they can't fake everything. They can't affect the emotional heat map of
a
hologram.
Wait a second. Wait just a second. Oh my God.
Saru, you've been sitting on this technology this whole time.
This is so irritating to me. Like, these are the cheap, lazy shortcuts that Discovery makes constantly. It's like,
in Discovery's defense, Star Trek constantly makes cheap shortcuts. Magic science and Star Trek.
They're basically doing it. It's like technobabble, but without the babble.
It reminds me of, like, the TOS episode, was it Court Martial? Where they're like, I can make everyone's heartbeat disappear, so we can only hear if there's anyone left on the ship.
Yeah.
Doo-doo, doo-doo, there's one person.
I mean, like I said, I'm in the middle of a Voyager rewatch, and Voyager is my favorite. And they're still like, I have Borg nanobots doing this, and all of a sudden we have this. I made a full shuttle in a week. I replicated all the parts. Okay.
Nanoprobes of everything.
Cool.
Look, blueprints are all you need, right, to make the Delta Flyer, and then you just follow the instructions.
Yep. And you replicate.
It's like an IKEA box.
You replicate all of the parts for all of this very special
while
metal.
On rations.
While on rations, right.
With only three torpedoes left.
Also, yeah, with Voyager, sorry. Where are the torpedoes coming from?
I think there's a YouTube video that shows every single shot of a torpedo in Voyager, and it counts them all up, and it's way more than they said that they. That was just a dumb writing box that they wrote themselves into on the pilot.
But but that's also just a logical thing. So you're stuck in the Delta Quadrant with what you have.
It made sense. It was a good idea, yeah. But they didn't follow through.
Or, you know, when they're mining other planets, we got enough whatever to have X amount more torpedoes. We've restocked right. our
get a crafting bench over here. We got to make a torpedo.
Five bricks and three sheep, though? It's really...
I mean, B'Elanna did make a full force field out of hot glue and a cord on the Delta Flyer the first time out to fix the microfractures.
I would argue.
Oh yeah, it was like the phaser and the manifold. That was a cool fight. I like that.
In terms of all of Star Trek, Voyager and Discovery, probably in my opinion, are closest in their lazy writing chance.
No.
This was what I think, but no. But there's the scene, and I brought it up because there's the scene where where they're facing down Section 31.
Is it Buzzsaw Mines, Daniel? Is it the Buzzsaw Mines?
It is that scene, technically.
Don't get me started on the Buzzsaw Mines.
But it's the one line Saru has, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, wait a minute. Not only do we now have proof that Spock didn't do this, even though we've had this video file the entire time, we now have proof that this admiral was fake. Right in the middle of this crisis, I was able to determine that all of these videos were fake. And it's just so jarring for him to be
Look,
like,
Daniel,
I
you
know.
Wouldn't download a starship, would you?
In Saru's defense, he was very much busy becoming a super...
evolving.
Yeah.
I mean,
spiky.
I'm not blaming Saru. I'm blaming the fact that they've had this video evidence for 6 months now, or however long we've been on this season.
Wait, are you saying, Daniel,
feels like
it's like
six months, but
someone had a code that they filtered through every single possibility and algorithm, and it turned out if you just read it backwards? Is that what you're saying?
They forgot to run it through the mirror filter. Even though that's on Snapchat. It's not in the Discovery's computer algorithms. Just so you know, but that's okay.
Cool. Well, let's I'm sure we can talk more about Airmen. We can.
Buzz Saws in space.
Let's talk about, of course, my favorite organization, and that's Section 31 and the Holograms, which was actually my favorite show in the 80s. Good cartoon.
They are fantastic. 31
well,
is all... their name. 31 is the same.
You know, Section 31 is doing its thing. Control. Now, Darren, you're judging from some Slack chat from you, if that's a term.
Sure.
You have the theory, which probably many people have, about what control is, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, just based off of what they've said in the show, but it sounds like...
Well, if you're going
to
use that.
Well, sorry. That's all I have to go on. No, it sounds like it's an AI that's in the base that the admirals feed data into, probably maybe starting during the war, maybe earlier than that, and it helps make the big picture decisions. Again... More like big picture suggestions, as it's the way it's supposed to work, you know. And it, on principle, it makes a lot of sense. All the admirals feed in their data and their recommendations. Control says, okay, because think about it. If you're policing and maintaining a federation of hundreds of worlds over vast distances, and you have to allocate resources and time and all of that, it makes sense to leverage, you know, deep learning, you know, computers to do that. But then it was sounding like Control, which apparently is the AI, I'm assuming, you know, is wanting to not listen to its masters anymore and take its next step, kills everybody, and then tries to get the sphere data to further its... maybe it watched, like, the V'ger tapes, or maybe that hasn't happened yet, but... maybe it's V'ger, guys. Maybe it's all V'ger. We all thought it was the Borg. I don't know.
Well, I mean, theoretically, V'ger is around. You know, it's not like he just appeared. You know, he's
on his way.
It's gender neutral, I'm sure. I feel like Control, it's been vague, I suppose. I keep thinking
Get Smart. That's all I got to think of. It's hard to not think of Get Smart.
Of course, having watched Captain Marvel, apparently Control is like the Kree supercomputer that rules Section 31. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Every story's already been told. So if I say it's a trope, of course, every story's a trope. Every story. But it's sort of like the, oh no, the computer that turned against us. Well, yeah, that's what happens in these stories. So I don't know. I don't know, Daniel, what are your thoughts about Section 31 and what we're seeing today? And, you know.
Section 31's like they're in a world of hurt right now. Like, their base has basically just been decimated. Basically, their infrastructure just collapsed in this episode, is what it feels like.
Well, I know, Robin, one of the storylines, or at least one of the kind of underlying storylines, was like, oh, you know, Pike and the Enterprise were out of the war in season one, and the Admiral Cornwall sort of reveals that there's a reason that she kept them
because
out.
He's so good.
That's right. It's the hair.
He's got good
he's
hair.
He's an attractive man.
It's not untrue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I broke a record about Section 31, but like... oh, they have minds, and like we're not supposed to have minds. And then the Admiral's like, "Yeah," I'm like, "Well, no, it's not. Every explanation can't be because of the war. I mean, that's you can't use that for everything, you know." Well, I know it's illegal, but because war.
Wait, then why did we have self-replicating
why do we have
minds
any rules?
In
like,
DS9?
Whole things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's like the biggest to me, like issue with Star Trek as a franchise is you can't say, like, and I've always found it so condescending, we've eradicated poverty and we have no need for these things, and then because we're human and that's the kind of drama that we're used to, it's like, okay, well then we've run into wars with Klingons and we're in wars with all these, you know what I mean, and like diplomacy doesn't exist and we have mines now and that's totally fine. Like, it's always been this like duology of, or I don't even know, like hypocrisy, I guess, is what it is, and we're just supposed to like take that for granted, I guess. But the entire idea that if the Federation has reached this level of enlightenment, they would never even have Section 31.
And that's a duology I have issues with, and that's me. I know people don't. But that, like you were saying, Rob, every Star Trek, more or less, represents its ship or space station as, quote-unquote, the good guys. I know it's more complex than that, but, you know, we're simplifying it. But, like, the Admiralty or the bureaucrats, they're the evil people. But like, well, then the Federation's evil. I mean, you know, it's the low-level guys are good, but the high-level guys are bad. Well, that's the Federation, and not, you know, we're supposed to be representing the Starfleet and Federation values, which apparently are just corrupt as F, you know, so that's, I always do not appreciate that duality, because it's supposed to be an aspirational show. We should see that the Federation, the Admirals, and the Federation Council are good as well, and so it's kind of like, okay, I don't know.
Mean, we have that, sorry to get, like, real-world political, but we have that in America when they talk about, like, American exceptionalism and American values, and it's like, well, you know, that's not really the case. But I think that what Star Trek doesn't do is, like, reckon with the fact that they have that. Like, we have these Star Trek. I mean, they kind of did it in Voyager a little bit when they would talk about, I mean, how just easily they push aside the Prime Directive when it suits their needs because they're out in the Delta Quadrant. And I just wish that they would talk about that more and that it would be it's always, to me, like, just a one-line throwaway thing. You know, Pike gets to be self-righteous and say, like, or not self, you know, Pike gets to be righteous and say, like, what's with the mines? And then the Admiral's like, it was war. And it's like, that should actually be the entire crux of that should be the episode. It shouldn't just be like, oh, well, okay, it was war. You know?
I think you're exactly on the right path. I see it a little differently. I think Deep Space Nine, and in fact, it's so funny we're talking about this, because I think the original conceit of Section 47 was a deconstruction of the entire idea that you're talking about. It's like, well, how can they be these people that are so...
You mean Section 31? I love that you did make it a Star Trek reference.
I did say 47. Section 31, the original, you know, on Deep Space Nine, when they started doing that, it was kind of a deconstruction of that sort of, how can these people be this amazing and incredible and then do all these things and have this hypocrisy as well and subjugate all these people, whatever. And it's so interesting that we've come from there to here, where it's now it's just like, it's not even just like Section 31 runs everything in Discovery, and they get to do whatever the hell they want with no consequence. And it's like, there's no point to this story. This is just what is, and it doesn't make any sort of sense in terms of the universe. It doesn't make any sort of sense in terms of what we're trying. What's the point of what Section 31 is doing here? No one knows. Who knows? I guess this is what we're doing now, though.
Well, and I'll admit, I was a little distracted during the beginning of the show because I was cooking, which is rare, I know. But, like, the whole, and then Darren, maybe you would sound like you were listening and talking to it, but the whole, like, we input information, and then, like, was there something about, like, in the event of emergency or something?
She was saying normally it would take our input and then it would give us a suggestion, but the admirals would still make the ultimate decision. And what they made it sound is that Section 31 is more relying on whatever control says and removing that human element and making, or
human, if you could hear yourself,
Josh,
Darren,
I do.
The very name itself.
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming.
How about humanoid? We'll just, what I mean. Maybe there's some Horta on the council.
A non-artificial intelligence has the final say.
But it's not even Section... It's not just Section 31. Mm. The Discovery has the whole command structure intermingled. It's because Cornwall is not part of Section 31, but she's like all of the admirals of Starfleet. So at this point, there is no effective difference between Section 31 and Starfleet, as far as I can tell.
Right. All right. Well, we could go in this in forever. Let's talk about Michael Spock, everyone's favorite siblings. So I had two reactions listening to the longer. I mean, it was throughout the episode, of course. But they're long, you know, chess throwing, chess beating scene.
I still don't know how to play 3D chess, Philip. I thought this episode was going to teach me, but
knight
no.
to king's rook. Oh,
if you don't take the rook, the opponent is allowed to slap the chessboard off.
That's right. I mean, yeah, that's the Trivenati's defense. Have you not heard of that? Okay. I mean, Daniel, you play wizard chess. It's like the same thing. Anyway, but like during their discussion, I had two different reactions, and I'm not sure, you know, which one I believe in. I was like, either A, this is very complex. They're both making points, good points. I mean, both of them, you know, we're hurting the other person, but sometimes they both make a good point. And I was like, it was really heavy, like really heavy. Like, I feel like I had to watch that scene maybe three more times to really understand it. Or I stopped caring and it's just frustrating and both of them really need to get over it. So I didn't know which way to go. So I don't know. What was your thoughts, Daniel?
Yeah, you know where I'm going to land on this one. The chess scene in particular was really frustrating for me because I don't get it. In terms of the Spock that we know, it doesn't really make sense. Like, then they shift tone mid-conversation. Like, Spock's supposed to be angry, and then all of a sudden he's trying to console Michael for feeling bad about things she can't control.
But it's angry consoling.
And then all of a sudden he just wants to feel angry. And it's like, I don't know. Honestly, this episode just kind of made it clear to me that they have Spock now, and they don't really know what to do with him. It feels like to me. And although I will say, I really liked the scene with Spock and Stamets. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's like a just something. Maybe
well, that was my fanfic the entire time, so I'm glad I finally made the.
I guess they had two scenes together. But I kind of liked maybe a little budding friendship there. That'd be cool. Follow that, Discovery writers. Well, but in terms of the Michael and Spock relationship, it just. I'm sorry. I have a sister. I know what it's like to be mad at your sister. You let it go after 20 years. Stop it, dude. You're supposed to at least understand how to control your emotions.
Which dude are you
talking
about?
I don't know what they're doing here. So, whatever. It just frustrated me.
I have a different take on that, which I have a brother. It really rang true to me.
I feel like we need to interview Daniel's sister.
My brother, he'll be like... First, you're talking about Harry Potter, and now this, you nerd. But what I got from that was not that he was consoling her, but that he was very frustrated by her inability to see the fact that, like, she's making all of this about her and, like, putting all these things on her shoulders, and it's taking agency away from... the Klingon, she's taking agency away from Spock, she's taking agency away from the Logic Supremacists. Like, all of these people are doing things, and it doesn't... One, it's not... They're not always doing things because of her, and two, she's not the only one that is in charge of, like, fixing the ills of the world, and they got into this... The one thing I don't like is that they got into their, like, fight when he was, like, very young... So, like, he is holding on to something that happened when it looks like he was, like, 8, maybe? But that...
When you don't get that pony for Christmas,
right? I mean, I thought that that probably would have... If that would have happened in their late teens, then that would have made much more sense. But I think he's frustrated because they reconnect, and she's still making it, like, putting it all on her shoulders. And he's saying, like... I didn't run away because of you. The Red Angel has nothing to do with you. Like, you know, like, this has nothing to do with you, Michael. Go away. And it was a frustration that boiled into a shouting match and then a, you know.
Chess throwing.
Throwing of the 3D chess.
I don't, I have to watch how I phrase this because I don't, you know, spill the tea here. But, like, Spock, okay, I like Michael. I do, which is, that means I'm not going to say I don't like her, right? But, like, Spock was saying all the problems I have with Michael. Like, you're so dramatic, and that's why I think there's so much potential with Michael. And maybe because, you know, that's my complaint about Discovery. It's very melodramatic, which is fine. It's just not my cup of tea. But, like, Spock's like, it's not about you, like you said. And I'm like, yes, that's been the problem with your voiceovers. I think there's so much great things about Michael Burnham, the background, the family relationships, but it's just always, like, ominous music and, you know, lip trembling. And, you know, I'm like, it's not all about you, Michael, even though you're the main character. I got it, but... I don't know. Spock was just... I was trying not to high-five the TV because I was like, oh, this is supposed to be an emotional moment. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to dog the character, but I was kind of like, yes. Because he was the guy like... Even he made so many points that I do think Michael would be a better character for realizing it at times. She's a self-sabotager in some ways because this whole, like, season one, oh, you're responsible for the Klingon War, and everyone thinks you're responsible for the Klingon War. I watched the first 5 episodes, you're not responsible for the Klingon War. Never thought you were responsible for the Klingon War. And so it's just interesting to kind of get Spock making all the points that I've been yelling at the TV about. Darren, what's your sibling read on this?
Yeah, I think...
And what
I
would your sister say?
I think I agree a lot with what you're saying about how, you know, things Spock said about Michael... And I mean, she's the main character, which is cool because you have like this, you know, these plot lines that evolve and move around her. And that's kind of different for Star Trek. But I don't know. I think you still need to find a balance of, you know, what other characters are we getting? And, you know, I mean, everyone sounds like they really like Arium, but we're not getting a lot of her before her death. But yeah, but sibling wise, I don't know. Like as we've been talking about Arium, I totally forgot that Spock and, you know, Burnham had that moment early on in the episode because it feels so overshadowed later by, like, it really has nothing to do with this plot. Like all the Section 31 stuff and Arium stuff feels like it has nothing to do with Spock and Michael. Yet we're still talking about it.
You're still talking about it. It's branding. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and also Spock. You know, let's jump in him too. It's his equal opportunity. That his I don't get why he was blocking any attempts to get to the truth about him. I mean, I get he's having this, and we can maybe talk Spock Stamets here, but this whole like I want to know why it chose me, but I don't want any of your help about why it chose me. Like, okay, well then, you know, this is going to be a frustrating scene. Then I don't know. What would you like about Spock Stamets, Daniel? Other than filing them under the cool. S characters.
Although, why did this thing that's floating in the middle, that he's carrying in the middle of the room, when he fixes it, all the lights turn on? It's not connected to anything.
I don't know.
But that's wireless. Just, it's wireless energy, Darren. Yeah. Don't worry about it. I just thought they had a good chemistry, a good little rapport.
And Spock is keeping eyes on the crew.
Yeah. Oh, man. Again, I just have to say, that's just like, show that. Show the scene where Spock sees him coming out of the... Show, and we could have got Culber this episode if they did that. They could have shown Culber and walking and Stamets walking out of their quarters together, and they're heated.
They've had the sad Charlie Brown music
and the sad Charlie Brown music, and then Spock's there, and then that's world building, and that's context, and that's emotional, and that's important. And then when we get this scene, it feels weird. It almost feels weird that we get Stamets being like, "Hey, I have this kind of." This advice that makes sense for me as a character to tell you. And then all of a sudden we get this awkward, oh, I also happen to notice you walking out of your shared quarters that apparently I'm aware of, even though I've only been on the ship for half an episode. And it's just like, you know what I mean? Like that's the thing that they do where they just take shortcuts. No, just show it. Just show it. Show the one scene for 3 seconds. You're good to go. And then we get to see it. But I do like, I liked the little banter that they had going back and forth from the first scene to the second. And maybe, you know, they could be buds. I'd like a Stamets-Spock-bud friendship. That'd be cool. I'm good with that.
This is fine. Okay. What's your Stamets-Spock fan fiction, Robin?
I don't really have any. I mean, I liked the scene. I like I like the idea of, and again, I haven't watched all of original series, and so, like, most of what I know about Spock is that he was Leonard Nimoy, and Zachary Quinto is really cute.
But he's not now.
But I like the idea of, like, Spock being on the ship for half an hour and clocking everyone's, like, what's wrong with everyone. Like,
if he had said boo, I would have been sitting.
You know, Michael, you're self-absorbed. Stamets, you're self-absorbed. All of these humans are self-absorbed, and it's not about you. I thought that was great, but I didn't really... I really like Stamets. I really like Anthony Rapp as Stamets. At this moment, I went to Broadway Con last year, and he sang at me, and I was like... One, the dude from Rent sang at me, but two, Stamets sang at me, and I'm having feelings because I was on staff, so I was on the stage, and it was just like, it was a moment.
What?
But I don't know. I mean, it was like a moment. It was cute. I'm not going to write fic about it. Ash Tyler is right there, so I mean, that's where my fic is going.
So you're saying Spock Tyler or Stamets Tyler? We need to know which shipping you're on board with.
Oh, I'm Stamets Culber all the way. That's
right.
My OTP. Spock.
Right.
It could go. I mean, I was really nervous that we were going to get some Game of Thrones, like Michael and Spock have a romantic thing. So I'm just really glad that did not happen.
It was definitely implied.
I'm glad. Okay, so it was just me. They also, like, no. I think they were also really tricky when they showed the kiss in like the previously or whatever. And I was like, was that Ash or was that Spock? If they're making out, I'm out. I don't want any part of it.
Yeah.
I think.
So that's why he never talks.
Yeah,
about it.
I think I'm more of a. Legal I think reasons. My fic is going to be more of a Spock Pike thing, and they didn't have any real scenes together, but that's what.
Yeah, Kirk Spock.
That's what's been building
Spike,
up.
Spock, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get into like you
Spike.
Know which one's Angel, which one's Spike.
Spike,
you know, that could be like a whole
Spock Pike. Spike. Oh, they have a shipping Spike. Name and everything.
Oh,
it's
man.
Perfect. Okay. Yep.
Yep.
Got to go right.
Yep. Hashtag Spike. Make it happen. You know, I'm not saying we're ending quite yet, but I just do want to pose this question to the roundtable here. So I'll save you for last, Robin, and I may or may not answer. Actually, I've already said the answer. The answer is Michael. Darren, who is the Red Angel?
I really would like it to be like Amanda or something like that.
It's
but
not Amanda, but go ahead.
I'm pretty sure they're going to make it Michael, which I mean, okay, she's the main character, but that doesn't necessarily mean she has to be everything.
As Spock said, look, the Red Angel's not about you, Michael.
Yeah, I think it would be way, I mean, it feels like that's what they're going to do, but I feel like almost anyone else would be more interesting if they were the Red Angel.
It's actually Arium. Yeah, surprisingly.
I mean, future guy who's actually Picard is a better theory.
It's
going to
be Bryce.
Than...
You know, it's actually.
But, yes.
So
who I want it to be is Amanda, who I think they're going to make it be based off of the teaser for next week, who they could totally be messing with me, but I think it's going to be Burnham.
Okay. Daniel, who is the Red Angel? Or is it all of us?
You know, you're putting me in an unenviable position to defend Michael, because I don't have any particular problems with Michael, but I wouldn't definitely be her staunchest supporter.
It's like when Riker had to prosecute Data. That's your...
But you say that she is self-righteous and she's self-centered and she feels like she's in the middle of everything. But let's be fair. She's told in the first or to the second episode of the first season... That not only is she the only mutineer Starfleet's ever had, but she started this war. She's told that from other people. And in this episode, Arium tells her, it's all about you, Michael.
Oh God, I forgot
everything
about that.
Is about you.
Is it a meta commentary? Can Arium now see the show without it? Okay.
So is she saying that when she's about to be blown out into space? I forget.
Yes.
That is true. Yep. I forgot about that. I'm
yes,
sorry.
She specifically. No, actually, in fact, I would argue that this entire episode is about that line.
Yeah.
She says, this is all about you. Everything starts with you. And then,
it's funny because I thought it started with Spock, but maybe I watched a different season 2 Discovery.
And then she goes, "You have to find Project Daedalus And then Michael asks, where is
Project Daedalus? Boy, I'm sure glad they used that title this
week. I'm very confused. Didn't Michael ask, where is Project Daedalus, and then hit push her out of the airlock before she could answer?
No. The lady with the
security lady.
Guard. Oh, okay. Because I was like, why are you shocked? You pushed the button.
She's a self-sabotager.
I was saying this to Philip before we were recording, and I'm like, I bet you those writers later are going to be like, man, why did we burn the use of Project Daedalus as an episode title when it's literally not about Project Daedalus at all? It's literally mentioned in the last 5 minutes.
And it was like as if Citizen Kane was called later. Rosebud.
Right. It's like 2 episodes later, it's like, oh, here's actually Project Daedalus. Boy, I wish we hadn't used that name, but I guess we can't now.
I already told Darren my prediction is Red Angel episode 10 will not be about Red Angel, but at the end, it'll say like, oh, and the Red Angel is, and then credits roll.
You know, it would not actually surprise me at all if that happened.
So, Robin, who is the Red Angel? Or who am the Red Angel? Possibly.
Who do you want to be the Red Angel, and who do you think will actually be the
Red Angel? So the Red Angel, I think, is Michael, like everyone's saying. Who I want it to be? Any one of the girl squad on the crew, but...
It's pretty much any human female, like, because that's what we've established, well, as a human female.
There's a security
lady. Or May.
Learn her name. That's right. Oh,
I could be Tilly. Yeah, I don't think it could be May because would she come back as a human? But she was very much like, I'm coming for you, Tilly.
The suit opens and it's just mushrooms fall out.
Yeah. But I think it'll be Michael. But that's boring.
I guess we did say it is human, right? Or at least that's what Spock
a said. A humanoid.
Human. Okay.
I think it's the...
No, he specifically
said human.
When I melded with them.
Yeah, not in this episode, but in the prior one.
Right, I will say I have a problem as well, real quickly. In the beginning scene Admiral...
Cornwall.
God, I always forget. Cornwall, thank you. Is meeting with Spock, and she has the, whatever, the balls that read his mind. Just to tell if he's telling the truth.
She has the balls to read his mind.
On the screen, it says he's Vulcan. And I'm like, he's just as much human, man. That computer's racist. That's not right.
That's speciesist.
Yeah.
I'm still very concerned about how humans can just mate with anyone. Isn't the whole thing about like what makes you the species is like can't mate?
It's like Captain Jack all over again. He just goes out there and does everything.
I mean, they can do what they want, but then having children is the part where I'm confused. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I don't know, because like you say, Robin, Star Trek plays fast and loose. But like in Enterprise, near the end, when they're talking about Trip and T'Pol and babies, and they're like, oh, I don't think it could work. And then like, oh, maybe it could. And now we're just like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, I mean, in Enterprise, they established this. And Spock has the line here, which is actually kind of an interesting canonical line, when he's talking to Stamets, and Stamets says, what makes you unique? And he says, well, I'm half human, but while it's rare, it's not... I'm not the only one, right? Yeah. So that's interesting. We learn that there's others.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I like that when he's like... You know why because he wants to know why he was chosen just as much as Burnham wants to know why it's all about her.
A lot of questions. That Sarek family is just messed up. Let's just.
I am nominating Sarek for Father of the Year. I don't know what you're talking about. I think he did a bang up job. Father. They're all very well adjusted.
Oh God,
he's like the Joe Kennedy of anyway. I was waiting for the line where like. Spock was like, you cannot know Sarek's mind. And she would have been like, we mind melded like 20 times.
He contra Skyped me right. All the time when I'm feeling down. So true.
Because from Next Generation, old Spock says they've never mind melded, he and his father, right? That's the, you know, because that's what he's telling Picard, you know, and then Picard's like, oh, you can touch his bubble. So yeah, guys, you know. Can't believe she's been keeping that one in the pocket. Well, you know, even though we've done a lot of, you know, if I'm looking at this episode across this season, you know, this is one of the better ones. I mean, I you know, have lots of questions and unresolved issues, but I was, it was, this is an episode, one of the few, I know, I'm complaining, that I would watch again, just because I think there's a lot I feel like I missed. It's a very heavy episode, maybe in a good way, maybe in a bad way, but I feel like you could watch this maybe two or three times just to be like, what's going on exactly? So, but anyway, let's do a final thoughts round and maybe about what's coming up and how much Ash and Michael will be making out.
Yes!
So, Darren, what are your final thoughts here as we close the book on Project Daedalus, never to hear about it again?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a cool episode. I mean, I liked I think we're all nitpicking on Arium, but we're all doing that because we wanted more of her. We mm-hmm. all enjoyed her character. It was something interesting, something different. The whole, like, downloading your memory. Like, if you remember everything, wouldn't you want the option to be able to delete the trivial stuff that you don't want to remember or need to remember?
It was the pin thief! Sorry.
Actually, it made me think more of... but no, I see what you're saying. There's a Robin Williams movie called Final Cut, which is one of his more like darker roles, where basically
not when he's like, the photographer who's taking weird pictures or something.
Well, it's like the future, semi-future, where you can have this like implant which records your entire life, and then basically they make like it makes really cool like memorial videos, and so he loads it into this computer that cuts out all the boring stuff like sleeping, you know, eye blinks, eating, you know, all that stuff that you do during the day that is not noteworthy.
Jodie Whittaker's Black Mirror episode.
So anyway, I would just say it was an enjoyable episode for that, for what we did get of Arium. I guess I'm kind of just ready to find out who the Red Angel is and move on. Fortunately, I think that's the episode title for next week. So,
or is it?
We'll see. Or is it?
So, Daniel, final thoughts on Project Daedalus, which, you know, the father of Icarus. So, you know, I think that speaks for itself.
You know, I actually complained a bit here, surprisingly for me, but the episode was, I thought, actually pretty well done overall. Some issues with the writing and stuff, but I thought it was well paced. I was definitely into it the whole time. I was really at the end, it was even emotional, I'd say, that Arium had to die, and it was like, it just would have, I just was upset that it could have meant so much more if it was played better, if we had cared about this character at all, you know, up to this point. But I honestly think this is one of the better episodes here of season two that we've seen so far. So I would say that it's because it was light on the serialized stuff and heavy on the action, and some good stuff there. So I thought it was pretty decent.
Sure, and I'll give you a last word, Robin. One thing I thought about this episode, and again, you're here beating up on Michael more, but like. And I get the Spock side of stuff, because siblings are always weird, I get it. But, you know, at the end, you know, when she couldn't make the decision, you know, for lack of a better word, obviously it's very emotional, you know, you're killing her friend, right? It's her lifelong friend, of course, we've seen that throughout the whole two seasons. But anyway, I mean, she's...
Philip?
I'm making that up. She's Commander Burnham. I mean, she, at the beginning of the show, in the first episode, was going to be groomed to be captain of a starship. I mean, these are the big decisions.
Yeah, I don't think she's on that track anymore, because I would not trust her as the captain of a starship after all the decisions she's been making.
Because in some ways... I don't know. I know there's a lot to it. But, like, the Burnham that I met in the first episode, and even the second episode, you know, I don't really have problems with the quote-unquote mutiny, but blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the whole, you know, very logical, but then, you know, that was... I feel like she's regressed in some ways, and that's me. People can disagree. But I feel like she should be a little more... I don't know. Controlled? Maybe that's the wrong word. But anyway, I don't know. I feel like she should be... not as stricken with these decisions. Because I feel like, you know, the whole, like, even if she couldn't get it herself, which I think she should have been able to, she was given a direct order by, you know, Pike, you do it, you know. And then she's, you know, I get that she's trying the last minute, and that's a very Star Trek way, because usually you find the solution at the last 2 seconds. But I don't know. That was my only, like, I feel that hurts the Michael character. I mean, she's compassionate, I get it. But anyway, That's my thing. But overall, love the episode. So, Robin, last words about Project Daedalus.
I loved it. I love Star Trek Discovery. I understand what you guys are saying, and I do agree. I think having Michael as the main character is kind of hurting the series. I love Michael, but the beauty of Star Trek, of all of the Star Treks, really, is that it's ensemble, and so I wish that they would get a little bit more ensemble. But I was also just, like, I was getting really tired of the hunt for Spock, so I'm very happy that they finally got to, like, have the confrontation. I felt like it was really drawn out in the earlier episode, so, yeah, I think it was an emotional episode. I think it was good. I got, you know, more of the Space Girls, like the Spice Girls, the Space Girls, get it? I just made that up.
Now you have to name each Space Girl.
Okay.
What are they?
Scary Space is Arium.
Oh, God.
Baby Space is Tilly. Posh Space is Burnham. What are the other ones?
Sporty.
Sporty.
Oh, I know these.
Sporty Space is...
I saw the movie in the theaters, all right? I know them.
Ginger Space has got to be...
Ginger Space is the pilot whose name I can't remember.
It's Detmer.
Detmer.
Yeah.
And then Sporty Space is... yeah, her.
Yes. There you go.
Boom. Space Girls. Yeah, I want to see more of them. I want them to have their own spinoff. I want them to travel with Picard.
Space Girl Squad.
Space Girl Squad. Yeah, I liked... I mean, I've been very much enjoying Discovery. I'm very upset that it's on All Access. I remain upset that it's on All Access.
I'll take it you're an American then, and don't get it free on Netflix.
No, but I get it free from other ways. Mwahaha. Oh. I have a friend.
Yeah. Friend.
Yep.
Who has all access.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. You're intercepting some communication.
No, I just have a friend who has all access and really enjoyed when I was live tweeting Star Trek on Twitter and let me use his login. So.
Well, you can always add us for any Star Trek stuff, Rob.
Yeah.
All right. So, of course, like we said, next week we'll be discovering who the Red Angel is. 100% guaranteed. You heard it from me first. Stay tuned next week.
Okay, now we're going to use this clip, Philip, at the beginning of next week's episode. For last time on City Alpha 3, when Philip said...
We all look stupid from our predictions. So Robin, where can...
We, Philip?
Yes. So, Robin, where can people find you on the interwebs?
I'm on the interwebs as Robin Ravenclaw, like everywhere on Twitter, Robin_Ravenclaw. That's usually... I'm on Twitter. You can find me at blackgirlscreate.org and all of the nerds of which I frequent. We write Hogwarts fan fiction. We talk about critical fandom. We write blogs and things, and it's all under blackgirlscreate.org.
Awesome. So, Daniel, you have your favorite fellow Ravenclaw. I hope you're happy. Where can we find you on the interwebs?
I was just going to say, Ravenclaw for the win. So there you go. You could find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word, as in, well, if you're not Ravenclaw, do you really even matter?
Ooh.
All right. Darren, I see you're wearing blue as well. I don't like where this is leading. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter, Twitch, or Instagram under Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi.
And I'll just say go green and leave it at that. You can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant. So until next week, I'm Philip Gelfis.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Robin.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3.